You have a pop quiz today. Pencils out.
Hi, welcome back to Teacher Quit Talk.
Where we're quitting and we're talking. And if we've talked about this before, we're sorry, but I literally just scrolled through our episodes and couldn't find it. So I don't think we have, but maybe we have. Who's to say?
You would think we would remember or have somebody to keep track of that. We don't.
So unfortunately, as a teacher, I only have like 10 months worth of stuff to talk about. So the fact that this podcast has been going for 2 years now, it's like we got to kind of dig deep.
Isn't that crazy?
I know, right? This podcast is one of the very consistent factors in my life.
Oh my God, that's beautiful, actually.
Isn't it? This podcast has been with me at two different rentals. If Whoa. That's not the American dream, I don't know what is.
Jay was 5 months old when we started.
Yeah, you grew an entire human.
Yeah, and the other one grew very large.
Well, don't body shame her.
Not like that. She's just so tall. My daughter at dance class, at very fancy ballet class, by the way, she recruited the entire class of two-year-olds to run in circles and scream. And when they would hesitate or stop, she would go, "Come on! Come on!" And she got kicked out the room.
I just want to kind of mention that fancy and two-year-old is a little bit of an oxymoron. I don't think two-year-olds are capable of being fancy.
No, they are not.
I think they're capable of being gaudy, but I don't think they're capable of being fancy.
There is a part of class right in the middle where she is expected to sit on a dot and watch all of her peers one at a time go through it's like called acro in the middle. It's like ballet, acro, and tap. And in the middle, she has to sit there and watch them roll down a wedge and do donkey kicks. And then they bear crawl. And then
I'm already bored and I'm not even there.
And then they crawl through a tube. She has to sit there while other children do that. The best case scenario was last week. She like stood in the mirror and performed for herself the whole time. So Perfect. She was just really compact and entertained.
She's such a leader.
She
you know
is
what I
such
mean?
A leader.
Like if she was on the group of people that planned Firefest, it would have been fine.
It would have been fine. Why didn't they call my toddler? She would have been on the food situation.
She would have. There would have been like go-go squeeze and those fucking yogurt puffs for everybody.
Speaking of Firefest, should we tell the people what we're doing?
Yes. So speaking of Firefest, we were like, I've always wanted to go to federal prison. So we are hosting Firefest, Las Vegas edition.
Teacher Quit Talk, Firefest.
So we're flirting with two different brandings. One is Teacher Quit Talk Firefest. One is official Teacher Quit Talk Conference for Greatness. So like, do you know who Kathy Griffin is, the comedian?
Yeah. Duh.
So she named her book Official Book Club Selection. That was the title so that people would see it and think that it was on Oprah's book club. Because that's like when that was such a big deal. And I think we need to find like some version of that for this.
You're so right. Can we brand it like an MLM summit?
Yes. Oh, I was thinking like those fake rich events in Aspen where they like pick the president.
Amazing. Amazing. We're going to actually do exactly that in Las Vegas.
It's the U.S. Department of Education Summit Teacher Quit Talk in the smallest font we can possibly find. The U.S. Yes. Department of Education Summit in bold, Teacher Quit Talk, font size 0.1 in gray.
I have an update for you from Hater Time last week. The person whose baby shower didn't get thrown by their school and it was so sad.
Yes.
She says, I appreciate you sharing my story. Getting all this off my chest helped me feel better about it. And more importantly, ready to move on and forget about those bitches. I wish that was the worst thing that happened to me there, but it was just one of the many. And yes, Fraz, of course this was in the South. I knew it!
Oh my God, I feel so bad for her. I still want to throw her a baby shower. She should be invited to the Teacher Quit Talk U.S. Department of Education Summit 2024.
Her child is very cute.
We have pics? Love
well,
that.
It's in the prof pic.
Oh, okay. Okay, period.
Is there anything you'd like to share? Do you have any updates or musings?
So during my PLCs at work, which I think everyone knows how I feel about, I switched from watching Below Deck on my phone to listening to Celebrity Memoir Book Club podcast. So that's like kind of the biggest piece of news in my neck of the woods.
Congratulations on the new chapter.
Because I think people noticing I was watching Below Deck was sending a harsher message than I meant to. But I wasn't even watching it. I was just listening to it. Like, I know what everyone looks like, so I don't really need to watch it. I can just listen.
Well, you know what? You could be sleeping.
I could. And many people don't show up. So I really don't want to hear anything about what I choose to do when I'm there.
No. I can't believe you go. You're such a good employee and professional.
One inconvenience away from literally like doing a Peloton strength class in that room. We're going to discuss what my admin wishes that I knew. Like, we're going to, like, if my admin were listening to this, A, I'd be fired. And B, they'd probably be like, oh my God, she was paying attention in that PD. Like, this is the type of info that they want me to be eating up that I'm just not. And that is the different types of assessments. If I was a education loser, I would say an assessment is just a way to measure learning. It's a fucking test. An assessment is a test. Whether it gets graded or not, it's a test. So what was I about to say? Oh, so we decided to do this topic because I think people outside of education don't realize how many different types of assessments we have to give. This is the part that my admin's not going to be happy with. I think that we waste so much time assessing kids. And I think that we live in like such an assessment driven education system that we lose so much learning because we're always assessing. And I just have a lot of thoughts about assessments and different types of assessments. I'm pro-test. I give my kids tests. I don't let them retake them. Like, I think there is a time and place, but I think that we've just lost the plot really bad. And I think a lot of people don't know how bad it is. So I want to tell you all these different types of assessments, what they're used for, and we can talk about which ones we think are a good use of time and which ones we think are stupid and lame and we should delete.
And if you remember our 112 days of standardized testing episode from the last holiday season, there are 112 mandatory standardized tests that students take between pre-K and the end of high school.
That was 112 like mandated district or state test, right? So what's crazy is that's not even the real number because that doesn't count teacher assessments. And often this is like the catch 22. Is like the district mandated test is the test the district made, but the district also mandates that I give them different types of assessments, and the ones that I am giving do not get counted in that. So it's actually much worse than we originally led us to believe.
Yeah, and what really troubled me when I was teaching is you need to do all these different kinds of assessments and monitor your students' learning at every single stage of the learning process. I absolutely agree with that. However, I would have 27 kindergartners in my class. So yeah, that level of formalized assessment just was not happening. And that's where you see things come in like little informal assessments where they're like writing an answer on their whiteboard and holding it up, or putting an answer on their fingers and holding it up. All these different kinds of like little quick things you do, because to do everything as in-depth as maybe the district would like, it's just not going to happen.
It's like, if I'm spending this many hours a day assessing them, when would you like me to actually teach them something? Just curious where we want to fit that in.
Right. And at some point, it becomes another part of the deprofessionalization of teachers, in my opinion, because a lot of that data is just going to the district. And we've talked about before that sometimes you're seeing people lying on their district data because they know it goes to the district. So what was the point of even giving that assessment? It's not informing your instruction. You're just lying to make yourself look good and check a box. And then, oh, let's move on to the next thing.
Speaking of like the district assessments, this is just a fun little fact I like to always say. For anyone concerned, just know this is not the norm. My district assessments aren't aligned to my curriculum calendar. So every single time I give one, there's at least a third of the questions. The kids have never learned that.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, I remember I did something similar. And my colleague's advice was to teach with the test in your lap and literally give them the test, like teach the test, not teach to the test. I think that's even better than what we were
asked. You're talking about like putting the test on the projector and you're like, all right, so it's a B. Everyone look me in the eyes. It's B.
Right. And it's like it goes beyond. And I think that there's like this standardization of testing that it is almost like born out of distrust of teachers' ability to like, yes, change and differentiate their content on the fly. And if we're not able to be agile in the moment, it's like, okay, well, thank you for A, not trusting me, B, wasting my fucking time.
My pet peeve in education right now, even though I have like 90 of those at all times, is one aspect of the deprofessionalization that I hate is that like teachers of all different subject areas are all expected to do the same things. So like everyone in my school, regardless of what you teach, you have to give a pre-assessment and a post-assessment and they have to be the same thing. And I understand like, if I taught English, something that really builds year to year, or math, something that really builds year to year, I can completely see where giving a pre-assessment would be super helpful. But I teach U.S. history, and this is the first time they've taken U.S. history really ever for most of them. Maybe some of them took it a little bit of U.S. history type thing in middle school. So I know no matter what is on that pre-assessment, I need to teach the entire curriculum. So to me, every year I do it, it's just like something I do, like you said, to check off the box. I'll look at the results just to see if something jumps out at me. But consistently, every year that I have done this, which has been many years, the average is between a 30 and a 45, which makes sense because it's multiple choice. So you'd get a fair amount just guessing, and then they can probably figure some out. And that average is usually consistent across our different standards. So it's not like, oh, all of them got a perfect score on the Civil War and did terrible. Like I consistently year to year see this, like roughly they get about 30% of everything. So that shows me I need to go over the whole curriculum every year, which makes sense for my subject area. So I just find it really frustrating that I also feel like education is really driven by ELA, which I understand because ELA is like the foundation and it's important. But I feel like we try and crowbar other subjects into doing their assessments the way ELA does it, when that might not necessarily make sense in every area. And like same thing, I was talking to a teacher at another school who's really frustrated that he's required to give like multiple choice tests now, because he said for economics, he did his assessments as projects where the kids had to draw out a business plan, draw out the supply and demand graphs. And he's like, I can't really get if they're getting it unless I can see them draw it on their own. So I think in a lot of teachers' experience, what the district is giving you to try and make you a better instructor is like actually very hindering. And like you said, it takes away your ability to make agile decisions and like serve your students.
Do you think that the way that we're shoehorning ELA assessment into other subjects is a result of the literacy crisis? Because I know that like when I was in teaching, they would say you have to do 2 hours of ELA instruction every single day, but it didn't fit into literally the schedule of the day. So they would say, oh, well, you can count social studies as ELA, you can count science as ELA, or vice versa. You can say you're doing science, but really you're just doing reading.
I think it comes from two different places. I think one, part of it is genuine because literacy is the foundation of everything. Like if you can't read, you can't learn science. You can, just not in like a traditional academic way. If you can't read, like you can't read the word problems. So I think part of it does come from that genuine place. I might be stepping on some toes with this one. I think the majority of it comes from administrators usually come from an ELA background, and that's all they fucking know how to do. Because some of my favorite administrators have been people that taught math or science, and I always felt like they were way more willing to be flexible with me because they didn't come from that ELA mindset. Some of the worst people I've ever worked under were ELA teachers, because not anything wrong with ELA teachers. Some of the best people that I've worked with teacher-wise have been ELA teachers. But I think a lot of ELA teachers go towards admin, partially because ELA is hard. So ambitious people are going to go for promotions. I think teaching ELA is very hard. So, and a lot of people have the advanced degrees and all those things, because I think a lot of what I'm saying is just kind of like from observation. But I think they only know how to teach ELA, and because they've never taught anything else, they assume that those strategies are applicable to other areas. And that's the only way they know how to model. Like, they don't know how to model an effective math lesson, so they're doing all their PDs and all their observations through an ELA lens, which I think it's so important to have an admin team that has, like, diverse subject area background.
And I think that's kind of echoed in what we see in professional development, where it's like, and I know you've said this before, if your PD isn't specialized by department, you're going to get a lot of shit that doesn't apply to you. And I think the first thing we get is ELA, for better or for worse.
Yeah. which like sometimes is helpful and sometimes it's not. And I think what's crazy to me is I think history is like the closest sister to ELA in a lot of ways because it's lots of reading and writing. And if I know that I'm feeling this, I can only imagine how math and science and like vocational training, art classes, I can only imagine they're feeling it way heavier than I am, because some of the ELA stuff is helpful for me. Like when we had a PD on like how to teach kids how to annotate and work with an annotation guide. And like that was moderately helpful because we do annotate documents. But like if I taught the HVAC class, I would be losing my mind.
I always taught inclusion setting, and we would be sitting there with our special education team and be like, okay, so we're going to spend this entire PD just trying to figure out how we can adapt this to our students. Like, I would just be taking notes like, okay, what about my kids that are, they're kindergartners? What about my kids that can't read?
They're like, we don't care if he can't read. The students should know the lesson learning objective and success criteria if you go over it with them at the beginning of the lesson.
As parents and teachers, we all want to set our children up for success. Maybe your child is struggling with a specific subject, or your students needed a little extra help with homework, or maybe they're asking questions that you're just not sure how to answer. And, you know, if your child is ahead and not getting challenged enough in class, IXL can be the perfect tool for them too. Yes, IXL. You know her. You love her. IXL is an online learning program for kids that covers math, language, arts, science, and social studies. And it's designed to help students understand and master topics in a fun, engaging way. And it offers positive feedback along the way. As a teacher, I saw firsthand how IXL can make a difference. Whether a student is struggling with a specific topic or trying to keep up with their class or even aiming to get ahead. And for a lot of parents, one of the most helpful features is the tailored approach IXL takes with every single child. IXL is powered by advanced algorithms that give the right kind of help no matter the student's age or personality. And with just one subscription, you get access to everything. So it's perfect for a household with kids from pre-K to 12th grade. It saves time and money. And a single hour of tutoring costs more than a month of IXL, so it's always worth a shot. Studies have shown that kids who use IXL consistently score higher on tests, and IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the United States. So 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are already learning with IXL. Make an impact on your child's learning and get IXL now. And Teacher Quit Talk listeners can get an exclusive 20% off of IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
How do you assess a child as something that they cannot and have not learned? Just like the snowball effect is so bad.
Have I ever told you about like my favorite student that I've ever encountered in my life who I want to be literally running the entire world?
The one that hates Ronald Reagan?
Oh my God, her too, but that's not who I was talking about. So I taught this one girl. This was at my old school. She was literally so, so sweet. And she was like, very, very newcomer. I think so. When I taught her, she was a junior. I think she moved to the United States when she was a sophomore. And just for context, like I taught in Miami. So like one really big hurdle of teaching in Miami schools is that kids don't, it's not as necessary for them to learn English, speaking from like they don't have to speak English at the grocery store. They don't have to speak English with their friends because Miami's a bilingual city, which again, which is great. But that makes it tough in the academic setting because that means the only time that this person is being exposed to English is during a very limited window of the day. So it's just like a very tough situation as opposed to, I've never done it, but I imagine it's easier to learn a language when you're being more immersed in it. Like if you were in like Bismarck, North Dakota, like I bet you would learn English real quick. But in Miami, like I said, when you're not as surrounded by it, you don't learn it as quickly. So I all say that all to say, like newcomer, she really was like on all of her testing, like level one in English. And this is the hardest working child I've ever met. They only would let us give them a Spanish-English dictionary. And I felt evil assessing them because I'm giving you a multiple choice test with documents written in the 1800s. And all you have is a Spanish-English dictionary. It would take her 2 hours to take a 10 question test because she used the dictionary to translate word by word, and she would get A's on all of them. Like, and all the other kids, when they would fail and they'd be like, it's too hard, I was like, well, you speak English, so if she can do it, so can you.
I don't know what you feel about district assessments. Maybe they've changed in my time away, but I just also felt like, again, they're just not responsive to your classroom. And I think that more than even a standardized test from the state, the district ones always felt more disruptive. It was like...
Yes, because the state ones are usually just once a year.
They're built into the school year to the point where, like, you can do a little review, you can do a little bit of prep. But when you have a monthly or biweekly ELA or math assessment from the district, it's like... feels so shitty because it's like you're just checking a box. Your kids may not have mastered that yet, but if you don't get them in by a certain date, you get in trouble.
I think the other piece of that is, at least in my experience, I've taught in two different states that both had EOCs. I always felt like with the state stuff, I got more clear communication about like what was fair game to be on it. Like one thing they had in Florida was like item limitations. So for each standard, I had a little box that said like, we will not ask about these things. So like sometimes really specific people or really specific laws, I was like, okay, cool. We can just talk about this in the general sense. And then same thing with the state I work in now, they released like a 54-page EOC study guide. So it gives you like really clear information by topic. It's very student friendly. And like, I still don't love that test. I think it is still too hard for them, but I at least feel pretty comfortable that like I know what to expect with it. Like I feel like I have a decent amount of tools. I don't have enough time to teach them all the stuff, but I at least have a pretty clear understanding of what's fair game and what's not. And with so many district assessments, especially because I teach high school, sometimes I'll be reading them and I'm like, I think it's B. What do you guys think? Like, they're hard.
So when you get a teaching credential, you have to take a CSET in California. It's like supposed to be everything you learn in elementary school, like through fifth grade. But you didn't have to take anything like that, did you?
So I had to take in Florida. It's called the General Knowledge Test. But I did not think it was hard. You have to pass. It's multiple subject areas there. They took away the writing. There's not an essay anymore, apparently. But when I did it, there was an essay. But like it, to me, it felt like, do you know eighth grade level everything? Like the math was like with the formula of the triangle. The reading was not that hard. The essay was like compare and contrast two nonfiction sources. Like it felt like just making sure you have a general grasp of things. Cause I remember I genuinely had to study for the math because I hadn't taken math in so long. But after like a couple hours on YouTube, stuff came back to me and I was like, oh, I remember the fucking Pythagorean theorem. They didn't even have the unit circle on it. So like, I know they didn't have high school shit. Do you know about the unit circle?
No, but the gag is that everything that you just listed is an elementary school standard.
What are they doing to these kids? Because I was doing that in middle school. Because, yeah, that's what, so it was, and it was multiple choice except for the writing. So I felt like it was pretty reasonable and to the point that when people would be like, oh my God, I still haven't passed. Because you had to pass within like a year of getting hired. And people would be like, I'm going to get fired. And I was like, I kind of think you should. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Like, why didn't you pass?
Yeah. So
in favor of that? Like, are you in favor of teachers just having to show a general competency across subject area? Because I'm not against it.
Yeah.
I have to say, call me a Republican, but I'm not against that.
I very much agree with having to do things like that. Because I think there has to be a bar somewhere. There has to be. And with the teacher shortage, I know that there's a knee-jerk reaction to like, oh, we're just going to lower the bar for teachers and make it easier to get into the profession.
Let them all in. Come on, come on.
I think charging $300 to do the test is stupid as hell. I think the EdTPA is abysmal. I think it's disgusting what you're asked to do on the EdTPA. But I think like a general competency test, I think that's good. And personally, I also think testing things like the RECA, this is very controversial. You guys are going to be mad at me in California, but I think the RECA is a really good test. I think having to learn about how to teach reading and how to break down these elementary concepts into something that you yourself are tested on, you know, being in a student's shoes for the day isn't so bad.
Yeah. Your answer was so much more like good and like kind and like inclusive than mine was about to be.
Lay it on us. We're ready.
Mine's kind of mean. Fucking call me crazy, but I think to teach the next generation, you should have to be able to recall elementary and middle school math. Like I said, I got on YouTube and learned it in a couple of hours. And I think you should, I don't think you should have to know it at all times, but I want someone that has the ability to teach themselves something and pass a test for it. And I think that that's really reasonable. And I've heard so many fucking Gen Z, free to be you and me, barefoot outside with the rainbows in your students type of people that are like, not all teachers are great standardized test takers. And I always go back to that comedian's bit where he goes, I think it's fucking Daniel Tosh, that little asshole. But he has this bit where he goes, what do you mean you're a bad test taker? You struggle with the part where we find out where you know what you know, where you have to tell us what you know. That's hard for you. You can't do that part. Like with children, I'm like, you didn't ask to be here. You didn't have any say in this. Like, this might be hard for you. Our job is to teach you. But with adults and teachers, I'm like, you work here. So get your shit together. Like, you're an adult. Teach yourself the goddamn Pythagorean theorem. You have access to the internet. And like, I agree with you. It should be free. Teacher, you should get paid for student teaching, all those things. But like, you should have to be capable of teaching yourself the Pythagorean theorem. I think that's a reasonable ask.
I feel like I have the authority to say these things as somebody who went through school with undiagnosed ADHD. I found out, for those of you who know what the EDTPA is, I found out that I had ADHD because I took Adderall illegally for the first time doing the EDTPA. And my brain went quiet instead of into turbo mode. And I bawled like a baby because I was like, this is what every, I could have had this my entire educational career. Like, are you fucking joking?
You're like, the whole time?
I know. And I wish that I had somebody in my life who would have told me, girl, you need to advocate for yourself. Your brain is not broken. You need accommodation. And I think that, I was going to say something else, but I fucking have ADHD. Okay, shut up.
Shut up about the sun.
Shut up about the sun. I don't think that we should lower the bar for teachers to enter the profession. I think that we should change the profession so that we meet teachers where they are as professionals who are educated, who, you know, deserve a livable wage and beyond. I don't think the answer is taking away things, but rather advocating for teachers to be regarded with respect. That's all.
Do you want me to read you some of the different types of assessments?
Please.
Some of these I've literally never even fucking heard of. I'm pretty sure they made them up.
Okay,
this is Education Advanced. This is an education company that works with standardized testing and things like that. They're used by over 1,000 districts in America. 5 types of assessments you should know. And some of the other lists I found were like 10 types, 7 types. So I don't even think we have come to a consensus. So 1 is formative assessments. A formative assessment is an ongoing interactive evaluation that gauges student learning throughout the instructional process. These assessments provide immediate feedback to teachers, allowing them to adjust teaching methodologies on the go to improve student learning. Some formative assessments include class discussion, group activities, quizzes. I disagree with quizzes. I don't think quizzes is formative. Spontaneous question and answer sessions, periodic student feedback, and homework. I also disagree with homework. Is homework an assessment? Not necessarily.
Depends how you use it. I used it to put it in the trash.
We were talking about homework today, and no one agreed with me, but that's fine.
You know, the biggest advocate for homework are parents who have gone through school themselves. They just love it. They think that you are not doing your job if you do not give those children some fucking homework packets. Like, there are parents that will fully judge your ability as a teacher if you say homework doesn't do anything. So that's why I stood in front of them at back to school night and I'd be like, listen, I'm not going to grade this. I'm going to give it to you. If you want to give it to your child, rock on.
Today, my coworker was saying, she was like, well, they need the extra practice. They need this. They need that. And she was talking about how, like, with math and reading and sight words, they just need so much practice.
No sight words.
I know. I was like, let's just have them, like, read for 15 minutes a day. That feels like we're rocking it.
That's
personally
what I would say.
And then she stopped talking, so.
You got to do some reading. You got to spend time with your kid.
Play outside. Soon as I said, I saw all the other teachers tune out of the conversation when I said, I don't know, I just feel like we expect small children to sit in a chair 8 hours a day. So I feel like once they're done with that day, they should just like be outside and chilling.
And everyone's eyes glazed over.
Everyone else literally just like went back to what they were doing. And I was like, yeah, I was like, all right, fuck me. Like, you know that TikTok audio where it's like, why are you yelling? I'm right. I'm right. Yeah. Do you have thoughts about formative assessments? I like formative assessments, even though I disagree with their examples. This is my other pet peeve of education. Why do we have to have a fucking name for everything? Why does it have to be a formative assessment? Can't I just be like, oh, I read the vibe and they're confused, so we got to talk about it more. I think that's my problem, is when my administrators are like, what's your formative assessment? I am like, I don't have that. But I, now that I'm reading it, I do.
Yes, you do. I like it because I like to have a baseline for my data. Like, I need to know what they know and what they don't know, so I don't waste my time teaching.
What you're talking about is a diagnostic assessment. So you're getting a what zero on your evaluation for not correctly sorting your assessments.
Bitch, I'm not a teacher.
Got you. This is exactly what it feels like to be observed. Just so everyone knows, that was not an exaggeration. Like, you can be telling them something that you do that's smart and effective, and just because you use the wrong acronym, they're like, oh, so you hate them? You want them to all be illiterate? Yeah. Which brings us to our next type of assessment, a diagnostic assessment, which, like you said, is like a sneak peek before the learning process begins.
What the fuck is a formative
assessment? Formative means you're already partway through the learning process. Formative is partway. You have to have started.
Why didn't we start on the bottom step?
Because this was written by an education company, so it's horrible.
Well, now I'm blaming you.
So a diagnostic assessment, it says teachers can use these assessments at the beginning of a course or a unit to assess students' prior knowledge and skills. This way, they can understand what students already know, where they might struggle, and tailor instructions accordingly. This includes pre-test, concept maps. I would say a concept map is a formative assessment because I don't think I would ask them to do that about something I've never taught them. Questionnaire or survey? Love survey. Why have I never thought of that? Because I could literally just give them a checklist and be like, check off the things that you think you know. Interviews? Who the fuck has time to interview all the kids? Or self-evaluation? This is a great task for providing students with targeted help, but maybe time consuming and require careful analysis. When do I have time for that? Teachers can use effective strategies to make the most of the results, such as grouping students based on their needs and designing individualized learning plans. There's 90 of them in one of me, but thanks so much for that. The next type of assessment is probably what you're all familiar with and what everyone thinks of when you say test, a summative assessment. That's like at the end, final boss dog. What do you know? What do you not know? You're failed. You're done. You're going back to ninth grade. What do you guys do for summative assessments? What do you do with children?
Well, same thing anybody else does. I mean, you like for writing, it might be write a sentence or tell me a story. For reading, there's usually like a checklist that you have to do, which I think that's like out of date now. I think you're not supposed to do that anymore. I don't know, guys.
Again, I will say in many states, it's legal to hit the kids. So I'm really not worried about an assessment style being out of date.
So true.
They're hitting children in Alabama, so I think you're fine.
We also did like reading out loud and having them circle things. Like you, but when you give them a test, you have to read through the whole thing. Like for phonics, you'd be like, there's part of it that you do one-on-one for every assessment, but then there's part of it that's whole group where you'd read it out and have them circle different shit.
Because the all the examples they give are like very high school. It says final exam, presentation, research project, and term paper. And like, I don't think many eight-year-olds are writing research projects. And then the other one that everyone thinks of, I've never heard of this, norm referenced assessment. And that says it's assessments where they compare the individual student to a larger group. So that's a benchmarks, standardized test, and college entrance exam. So I guess like the SAT. Have you ever heard of this one? I don't even know how to pronounce it. Ipsative assessment. Do you know what that is?
What the
it
fuck?
Says it
no.
Can measure current student performance against previous results to track student achievement over
time.
Oh,
we did that.
This assessment often uses a two-stage framework that allows students to retake exercises, student work, or test, encouraging them to learn from their mistakes and do better with a second try. This is what I'm saying. They just feel the need to fucking name everything. Like, we're... Shut up. And I guarantee your district, if you're listening, probably has someone whose full-time job it is to teach you about this, when that's literally all of this is just doing school. Like, I tell them stuff. When they're confused, we talk about it again. We write stuff down. Then we read stuff. Then I write down what they wrote down. Like, why do we have to have a name and a little category and a document for every single thing we do of every
Aristotle
single day?
Aristotle taught under a tree, okay?
Yeah. Like, no learning objective, no assessments, just vibes. And I'll, like, today, I asked a kid, I felt like he was confused about something. And I said, and I should give a fake example because no one has critical thinking skills. It's Republican motherhood, but it's like, it's a whole different thing. I asked him, I was like, tell me about the Stamp Act, because I felt like he was confused about that. And the work he turned in, I will just say, was of a higher caliber than I am used to from him.
Oh, fuck no.
So I said, tell me about the Stamp Act. And he looked at me and goes, I don't think I know that. And I was like, this was a great formative assessment. I know that you don't know that now.
There is nothing like a parent taking a fucking assessment. It drove me insane during COVID to give these kids assessments because I desperately needed to know what they knew and what they learned. I needed it more than I needed it in person, arguably, because I needed to like hone my shit in. And it made me livid when I had to give the stupid ass map test and I had parents doing it for their child. I was like, you are fucking my entire pool of data. Every percentage now of my whole class is fucked. Your kids' data is fucked. They're going to show a decline if they do it by themselves going forward. Everything is ruined. And you just wasted my time. I just spent so much time on that. And it hurts my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's so terrible because parents, I think, are so well-intentioned. What I will say with this work that he turned in that was not from his own doing, I'll leave it up to the opinionators of where he got this information. It made me less mad than it would have been on like something that I called an assessment, because like I did say you could work on it at home. So I get like you were probably just having a hard time and wanted help and needed extra info. I wish you had just, I don't know, asked me. But I can't imagine if I found out a parent took like, this is one thing my kids always get upset about. I make them take their test on the computer and they always are like, print it out for me, print it out for me, print it out for me. But I make them take it on the computer, A, because their standardized test is on the computer, so I want them to get used to it. And B, because then at the end of the year, I have them go in and look at their own reports to see which topics they did the best and the worst in. So if I found out that a parent took a kid's computer test, I would lose my mind because like you said, now you just messed up. Literally, I spend like 2 full days where they make an individualized study plan so that they pass the AP exam based on their performance on all of our unit tests. So like if you helped them magically achieve 100 when they should have gotten a 50, you're just going to make it harder for them to pass the AP exam. And that's what I always tell kids when they cheat on stuff is I'm like, are you going to have Wikipedia during the AP exam? Are you going to have your friend? Are you going to have dad? No, it's going to be you and your little blue book. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Life lessons right there.
So in the 5-star review, tell us which type of test did you realize that you were already doing because you didn't need a bureaucrat with a PhD to tell you about it?
Get them redacted.
Because like I said, everything I just read, we've been doing that. That's what school is.
So true. All right. We love you.
We love you all so much. We'll see you in Vegas and we'll see you on here.